So here we are, two of the most masculine men on the internet talking teddy bears again. So let's do this thing.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Teddy bears are hot.
Yeah, so how are you this week, Ted?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right. So yeah. So what do we have tonight?
Tonight we have another stuffed bear, a little more famous than even Paddington, but we'll see how good we think this teaser trailer is. And then a couple other movies.
Yeah, what is it? Isle of Dogs? And then you wanted to cover, what, Dinosaur Protection League or something?
The Dinosaur Protection Program.
Or Dinosaur Protection Program. There you go.
That's right.
Yeah, we got to make sure our reincarnated dinosaur from DNA, they don't go back extinct. We got to make sure they stick around.
Yes, the island is going to have an explosion. What is it called? An eruption.
Oh, volcanic eruption. Yeah.
That's right. A volcanic eruption.
Well, before we get into dinosaurs, let's talk teddy bears.
Yes.
And get to Christopher Robin. So looks like a kid movie. I should say a kid movie, maybe a family movie.
As recently as last year, we had Goodbye, Christopher Robin, which was a Fox Searchlight film that came out.
Yeah, and that was more about the authorship of the book, right?
Right. That was the journey of Milne and his PTSD from being in the war and then writing these books with his nephew or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very close in timing, you know. Like, there's a lot of Winnie the Pooh stories coming around. And then early this year, as we know, we were covering Paddington 2, which turned out to be one of the best tracked movies of the year. I think Black Panther and Paddington 2 have like the highest Rotten Tomato ratings of any movies in 2018.
Well, yeah, Black Panther, certainly.
So this movie, I think, has a lot to live up to. Winnie the Pooh's a loved character. They have a great cast. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, so with Goodbye, Christopher Robin, and now Christopher Robin, I mean, is this peak Pooh? You know, we've had, what, peak Dwayne Johnson and peak, what, it's Michael
peak
Shannon.
Michaels, yeah.
Yeah, Michaels, and now it's peak Pooh. So my thoughts. Yeah, I mean, it looks cute, you know? I mean, and I think Jim Cummings' voice sounds so much like Sterling Holloway's iconic Winnie the Pooh voice. I mean, I don't know how they kind of get it there, you know? But, I mean, it sounds great. Kind of gives me a few, like, the beginning reminds me a little bit of A Christmas Carol. And, like, his boss talking about, well, let me back up. Christopher Robin, who is played by Ewan McGregor, he says, these people need good jobs. And the boss is kind of like, yeah, you should do whatever you want for this company or whatever you need to do for this company.
Yeah.
So he's kind of has that Ebenezer Scrooge flair to him character. I like the lighting. I like that like, silver effect. I'm not sure if I'm sure there's a technical name for it, but it's like that silver effect, like, kind of muted color. It's not really black and white. Obviously, there's color in there, but it kind of plays into that tone a little bit. The music sets a nice tone as he's coming. He's trying to figure out, like, oh my God, I'm losing my job and my family just left. But the music has that upbeat rhythm to it right before he reunites with Pooh. So it kind of has that tone of hope as he's walking into that garden before he meets Pooh. So, you know, I thought that, like, the musical score for the trailer. So I think, yeah, so far it's pretty cool trailer. I like it. How about you?
I like it. I'm excited to see the movie, I think. Jim Cummings actually has been doing Pooh and Tigger's voice for a really long time. So I think we checked the liners, and he's not doing Tigger's voice in this movie. So I'm interested to see how they work around that.
Right.
But to me, I feel like there's been a lot of these movies recently, though, with this movie, with Paddington, and even not so much peak Winnie the Pooh. It's just peak nostalgia, you know? Mary Poppins Returns is coming soon, and that teaser trailer dropped as well. So even though I'm excited about the actors and the voice actors and everything about this, I just feel like I can't get excited about seeing this movie. But I was, the thing that about this teaser trailer, because it's clearly says teaser trailer all over it.
Uh-huh.
It really felt like a proper teaser trailer. So I was railing on Mortal Engines, you know, when that teaser trailer came out.
Oh, it was awful.
And even last week when they were calling the Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, when they were calling that a teaser trailer, it felt like a full-blown trailer one or first official trailer.
That completely felt full.
Yeah, this feels like a teaser trailer, and I thought it'd be nice to kind of define what I thought makes up a teaser trailer. I think I've done it a little bit online, but it's light on exposition of the main overall arching plot of the story. But it does include the inciting incident, which is him being told he can't go with his family. So he kind of conjures up his bear from his childhood. And it gives you a taste of the CGI or the graphics that we're going to see throughout this thing. So I think the Mary Poppins Returns teaser trailer and this teaser trailer are true teaser trailers that give you the sense, the taste, everything about the movie, and try to excite you to want to see more trailers for this property. Of the three Disney movies that we've talked about, these two are definitely teaser trailers. I don't know. I feel like this time and place has been gone to a lot. And, you know, last week, there's a dual thing with Ready Player One where it's in the future, but it's referencing the recent past, the 80s and the 90s. So I like that time frame rather than this time. This time frame just feels like we've gone here too many times, and I don't know whether I'm excited to see it. I mean, to me, Saving Mr. Banks was great. I love that movie. And it's, you know, that I don't know how you're going to top that. So if this is trying to go towards Saving Mr. Banks, then we'll see. Oh, and the big joke that everybody's saying is this is like a Ted sequel or something, you know?
Yeah.
Grown man talking to a bear.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking too about this. It's going to be, or I think the audience is going to be grandparents and grandkids, mm-hmm. because the grandkids never did anything with Winnie the Pooh as far as, you know, 5, 6, 8 year olds and stuff, because he's kind of new to them and that's right in their wheelhouse. And then grandparents today were probably kids when Winnie the Pooh was first out with the original Disney stuff, where the people in the middle, you know, maybe like me and you and some people maybe a little bit older, a little bit younger, Winnie the Pooh's not so much of our childhood. I don't know, maybe it's a grandparent-grandchild movie. The one thing I didn't really care for, and maybe we just haven't seen enough of it and they haven't really refined it, is I don't like the way Pooh looks.
Oh, really?
And I don't like the way his mouth moves when he talks. It seems just too, like, stiff or something. You know, like, there's not enough reaction. There's not enough expression in his face. It's just, like, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, man, he's very stiff and very, like, old school puppet. Not necessarily, and maybe that's what they're going for, but not necessarily CG. Like, I think we've come so used to seeing, you know?
So, yeah, and I mean, we don't know if it's done or if it's, you know, still, they're still refining the CGI, you know? So,
exactly, yeah.
So there's a lot that could go.
Well, it comes out, what, August 3rd?
Yeah, I think it is that late.
Yeah, I was looking all over the internet. They're kind of hiding it, it seems, you know. But on Wikipedia, I saw it was August 3rd because IMDb didn't even have the date. And then one question I had, why do you think they equate Winnie the Pooh to Beauty and the Beast for the legacy card? Because they don't really talk about many. I mean, with all the Disney movies, they don't talk about any of the other ones. They talk about Beauty and the Beast.
I think they're just trying to capitalize on a recent live-action reboot, live-action remake of an animated classic.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's the Beauty and the Beast they're talking about. Is not the if Cinderella was bigger, they would say Cinderella 2. But I think Beauty and the Beast hit such a high note for who went to go see it that it's the perfect legacy sell for anything in this space.
Winnie the Pooh, you know, he has the clever quips, like feels like he's cracked. Well, you just have some wrinkles or whatever, wrinkles, you know, and all that. Where This movie, I think you're going to leave feeling a little bit like the more nostalgic warm fuzzies, etc. Whereas like in Paddington, he's got more of the hijinks and, you know, the wackadoodle, whatever he's doing, acting goofy. Mm-hmm. So a little bit different bear movie, I guess, but different feel to the bears in a sense.
Unbearable.
Yeah, that's... Like I said, I think this is a good one. Grandparents and grandkids. I think kind of those middle ages, the people in their 30s and 40s, whatever. I don't know if it's going to hit that mark, if you ask me. Definitely little kids. And I think definitely the old folks, everybody in the middle, I think they're going to kind of lose. That's kind of my feeling.
So the greatest generation and millennials and younger.
Well, no, the greatest generation is like in their 90s now. I'm talking like maybe the baby boomers.
Oh, baby boomers.
Yeah, the baby boomers who are now grandparents, like our parents. And our kids, like, that's who's going to be going to this, I think. Maybe that's what we do. We go with the grandparents. They go take the kids into this one. And then, you know, Clarissa and I go see, heaven forbid, Mortal Engines. But something more like action, funny, thriller, comedic.
My anniversary is August 10th. So hopefully it'll come out before that. So then I'll get somebody to take the kids and see this.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't have a whole lot more to say, but it's a teaser trailer. We're looking at, what is it, a minute or something? Just over a minute. I mean, it looks cute. I think the trailer has some good cinematography. I think the sound score is decent. You know, I think it does what it needs to do. It kind of sets the stage for what's to come. And yeah, I think it did its job. You know, I mean, I don't think it's bad at all.
Yeah, I thought the music was a little too sentimental.
Well, I think that's what they're going for.
I guess that's what they're going for. I guess that's why you're saying it's missing our whole Gen X here. So
exactly.
but a proper teaser trailer. So I'll give you my three-word review.
Let's hear it.
Ted takes London.
So wait a minute. Why Ted? Teddy bear?
No, like Ted, the movie Ted with there's Ted and there's Ted 2. So this is like Ted Takes London. But instead of Mark Wahlberg, we have Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. Yeah, with Ted, though, a lot less vulgarity, right?
Yeah, not so much here.
Right, exactly. All right, so I'll let's see, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
So Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, we've already seen a trailer from that. They had a trailer in the Super Bowl, and they've had a couple other, you know, Blue is back. We were talking about that. But this past week or a couple weeks ago, they came out with this website and this program and this whole thing that's called the DPG. Dinosaur Protection Group. And there's a website, dinosaurprotectiongroup.com, and there's a hashtag and all the social tags and everything that goes along with a regular real-life project like Greenpeace or something like that is involved here. All the way down to the idea that there's going to be a march. There's a march on Capitol Hill in September. The movie comes out in the summertime, so it'll be after the movie comes out. But I just thought it was interesting to have a hashtag where it says hashtag we can save them. And I just thought that was a little, with the Me Too movement and with Black Lives Matter and with all of these other things swirling around, this is a marketing campaign that's trying to use a hashtag that sounds like it could be something serious for something serious. Hashtag we can save them.
Yeah, and is it implied for something else?
Well, I looked around and I couldn't really find much else on it.
Yeah.
Hopefully their people also did the same thing and made sure that it was a clean hashtag to use. But it just seems like it's treading in a space where you don't want to be insensitive to that. But, you know, you tell me as a layperson, sometimes marketers can be a little too sensitive.
Right.
To being politically correct or to steer clear of something that is edgier or something that's like this. I really liked within the website, there's a lot of white papers, you know, they call them reports, and they're some of the glossiest reports about all the different kinds of dinosaurs, and it looked really, really pretty and really glossy look to the whole thing. So it was a neat campaign for some historical dinosaur information.
Yeah.
I thought that was neat. And then it's great to kind of entrench your built-in audience for the movie that wants to do more with the movie. So there's a lot to read about some of the supporting characters within the movie. So it's the only A-lister you have is Bryce Dallas Howard, that who kind of runs the whole DPG, and she does the promo. She does the PSA-like promo that they have in there. But then they also talk to those couple other people in the in her group. What did you think? Did you check out the website at all or see any of that stuff?
Yeah, well, when you sent the, what would you call it, like the promo video of...
Yeah, it's like a fake PSA.
Like Save the Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
As I'm watching it, I'm thinking, what on earth is this? Are they coming out with some other movie? And is Ted asking me to review a trailer for, like, Save the Dinosaurs? And then I'm thinking, like, is this real? Like, or at first, you watch it and you're like, it's really well done, first of all, as like a PSA, like you said.
Right.
As like an NGO, you know, like this NGO that we have set up, nonprofit. And we're going to go have this school, this elementary school campaign. We're going to get all these elementary school kids on board. It's going to become like, you know, they're going to fill the coffee can with, you know, whatever. And we're going to send it off and we're going to put this money to go save the dinosaurs. And then as you're watching it, you realize like it's just satire and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, overall, it's pretty comical, I think. Comical in a subtle way. And I think as you watch it and you get towards the end of it, you're like, okay, this is just way over the top. But it has to be, because it has to be real, as if the dinosaurs are here and you're trying to save them. Maybe like I could totally see something like this with like manatees or something, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see some PSA, you know, going through the Florida Keys and Southern Florida, and you're trying to get school kids on board with all this stuff.
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, like there's a website, and at the bottom of the website, it asks Stan the Know for updates, news for the DPG. It has like this sticker that has a little triceratops, and it says "Save me," and it looks like a cute little pink triceratops. But it asks for the person's name and email. And my only concern is that the movie is not, it's going to be either PG or PG-13, right? And this website campaign, this DPG campaign, feels like it's for school age kids. Like
exactly, yeah, that's what I was saying, like elementary school.
But do you think like a young kid could stumble upon this and then think, oh no, there's an island out there in the real world that has these dinosaurs on it? And I think this just is another cautionary tale to parents out there to think, like, the fact that it has this asking for their name and the email address at the bottom of the splash page, the first page you come to, it actually means that this website is not COPPA compliant. So it's not safe for children because it's asking for personally identifiable information on the splash page. Just knowing that, and then like, I like the fact that they have Universal Studios and Amblin Entertainment in the bottom, the rights and stuff like that. But it's right next to the terms and conditions and things like that. So, I mean, very rarely would people even get that far if they were into it. That's my only negative, is the fact that they do that. I love the idea of diving deep into the world of the film and letting your real fans, your Uber fans, just really get into it. And this is other content that if they shot it for the movie, it's going to be a very small part of the movie. But it feels like they shot a lot of this stuff with Bryce Dallas Howard specifically for this. So it's a lot like that Deadpool, you know, that Deadpool promo that Deadpool trailer we talked about, where they're shooting a lot of extra stuff with Deadpool. So they're shooting a lot of extra stuff with it, with her too. So it's very interesting.
I guess my last comment would be, like, if I were a marketing manager or somebody in a marketing department that's making something like this as an advertisement to get people to go see a movie, the biggest concern I would have is that, you know, somebody's watching it, they see the Save the Dinosaurs, Protect the Dinosaur group and all this, and they're going to be completely lost that it's a part, or it's intended to be marketing for a Jurassic Park movie coming out. And they're just going to watch it It's going to go right over their head, and then it's like back to Dancing with the Stars or wherever they're airing this thing, if they even are airing it. But like, people are just going to watch it, and they're going to think it's like, who knows what, a new toy from Mattel or something, and they're just going to completely miss the point that it's for a Jurassic Park movie. All the money and all the marketing and all the stuff that goes into making it is just for nothing, because like, people are just... It's kind of lost on them.
Right. And I guess you're hitting a smaller niche group. You're trying to hit those uber fans of Jurassic World.
Yeah.
But can't get enough of like trying to find out these little Easter eggs, or trying to find out, you know, how many minutes Jeff Goldblum's going to be in it or whatever. You know what I mean? There's so many things in a franchise movie like Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, where there's so much to mine there for people that are into it, that check on the, you know, their Twitter page every day to see if there's new news about Jurassic World, that this gives them something to really, really dive into. So it's marketing for those people to keep them on the hook, which you don't really need to. It's like they're already bought in. You already bought the ticket.
Yeah, they're already. It's like we talked about with Star Wars, you know, like at some point I get tired of it. But yeah, regardless of the trailer, I'm still going to go see Solo.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This kind of campaign always makes, to me, it makes more sense if you're pushing your date, or if you have like, you had, you know, talked about putting this movie out this year, but the CG is not working, we got to put it out next year. Then something like this can suffice.
It holds you over.
In place of, it'll hold the, you know, hold the franchise up to bridge that year to get you to the next movie.
Yeah, totally.
But I like them doing campaigns like this. I like the idea of something that's immersive and, you know, for the super fans and not forgetting them, you know, because it's like, if you're just like you and I were talking, like, this isn't going to make new people. It's not going to hit the people on the fringes.
Sure.
This is hitting that core demo that's already going to see the movie, and it's giving them something fun to do while they wait to see the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the last thing is, we were talking about how in Deadpool they shot a bunch of extra stuff. The one Deadpool, though, that I saw recently that I just was cracking up was when Deadpool was Ross doing the painting.
Oh, yeah. Bob Ross. That's right.
Bob Ross. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that really quick.
That is a great promo.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Do you have a 3-word review for this?
Well, no, I didn't do a 3-word for this because it was a whole campaign.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering. I mean, it's not really a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I still love my 3-word review for the movie, for the trailer where we did Blue is Back.
Yeah.
Because Blue was such a great character in the movie and a good character in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say that from DPG, we can go to DOG in the next trailer, Isle of Dogs.
All right, before we do, how about we take a break?
Let's do that.
And we'll be back.
Coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast.
And my friends, they all wimp out. They're like, oh, we'll take the muscles. And I was like, you guys, we're going to do this with me. And my steak comes out, and it's got a sparkler stuck in the bone marrow, and it's like going off, and everybody in the whole restaurant's like looking at me, and I spend the rest of the night just downing this steak.
If you are enjoying our trailer reviews, or even if you are hating them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com, and you can also comment on the episodes at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. And now let's get back to it.
Back. So what did you say now? The DPG to the DOG?
From DPG to DOG.
There you go.
So from the dinosaurs to the Isle of the Dogs. And that's funny too, because the dinosaurs are on an island as well. These dogs, the Isle of Dogs, is Wes Anderson's latest animation, stop motion, mix of all of that.
Yeah, I looked at it as, yeah, the stop motion kind of not like claymation-esque Tim Burton type movie.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Did you see Fantastic Mr. Fox?
No, I did not.
Oh, I love Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, maybe I should check it out.
Yeah, it was funny. We saw this trailer when we saw Ferdinand. Both my kids, 8 and 12, they said, "Daddy, you can go see that movie. We have no interest in seeing that movie with you."
Wait, The Isle of Dogs?
I was like, really? Yeah, I was like, it looks cool. Doesn't it look cool?
Wait, and an 8 and a 12-year-old said they don't want to see it?
My 12-year-old said she didn't want to see it. My 8-year-old was on the fence.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. You know, okay, let me just start by saying my first complaint is when anything is in the future, it's never in the future enough, right? Because, okay, this is 20 years in the future in Japan.
Uh-huh.
So if you go 20 years in the past, I mean, smartphones are here. Smartphones weren't back then, but they are now. Other than that, the world is more or less kind of the same. Not much has changed. Maybe gas prices are a little bit higher or something, but I mean, like, there's not a whole lot difference. 20 years in the future, is it going to look that much difference where the dogs have just taken over and they're just, it's kind of like the Ready Player One. That was what, 26, 7 years in the future, whatever. And it's this dystopic thing where people are in Ohio living in like junk
towers
heaps or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever they are. It's like, really? In 27 years, it's going to change that much? It's not in the future enough. It's whatever. So, I mean, I'm just nitpicking there, but
yeah,
it looks pretty funny. You know, I mean, the one thing I like about it is how the dogs speak English, the people speak Japanese, but it implies that barking is what English sounds like to Japanese people. So I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, then what language is Jake barking in? And whenever I travel out of the country, I should bring my dog with, because I might find somebody to communicate with him, and he'll be like my interpreter, you know? So I don't even know if that's what they're getting at, but that's what I got from it, you know, is that when Japanese people hear us speaking, that we must just sound like we're barking at them, you know?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, like, that part I thought was really good. And just the cleverness and the guy stealing the plane, and then he crashes, and, you know, he's sitting there, and they have him looking through, like, his little helmet, and the dog's looking at him, and he's holding up the card, whether he's looking for Spot or whatever, you know, and he has little flip-flops on, and I don't know, it's pretty funny. It looks pretty funny.
No, it's amazing. So, the two movies of his... First of all, Rushmore is one of my favorite movies of all times.
How can it not be?
But he did Moonrise Kingdom. And when I watched Moonrise Kingdom, I thought the set pieces that he established for that movie were so beautiful and so well thought out and so designed that it was just, everything was meticulously taken care of. So I appreciated that aesthetic. And when he did Fantastic Mr. Fox, it's an adaptation of a child's book. So it's somebody else's story, but it has everything that Wes Anderson puts into all of his characters and all of his films. He is another auteur that we talk about a lot.
Sure.
I like that this is a blend of that Moonrise Kingdom meticulousness of the space with the filmic style of Fantastic Mr. Fox, and, you know, just the energy of all the scenes. You know, when even like the quick cuts that they use in this, when they're showing supposedly like whatever the bad guy is, and, you know, the lighting changes and he's super pale and he's like yelling at the camera. And
who's that, Mayor Kobayashi?
You don't even know what's going on, and you can lose yourself in this space where you don't have to know the words that are being said, because the way people are acting and the reactions of your heroes and anti-heroes and villains, all of their actions and reactions are driving the story forward with or without the dialogue. So dialogue is something that he spends a lot of time crafting, and you can tell that, you know, he loves writing it. I don't know if he wrote this one or what part he played in that, but it just feels like this could move you even if you weren't listening to every word. You know, it's going to move you in every way.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That's what excites me about this movie.
And what's cool about Wes Anderson, and what I notice in this movie too, is, so if we look at photography, you know, there's all these like rules, right? Like the rule of thirds and all this stuff. What I find in a lot of his movies is that he's very symmetrical. If you drew a line down the center of your screen, like his movies tend to either fall to the left or the right, or I mean, they're like dead center. And this is no difference. I mean, when you look at the splash screen of the official trailer, like all the dogs looking at the guy through his helmet.
Oh yeah,
the black dog is dead center. The feet kind of frame him symmetrical. I mean, it's like perfect. And oftentimes, you know, you always want to have somebody off to the left or off to the right or in the top corner, or the bottom corner, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah,
and he doesn't do that, you know. So I think it's like he breaks the rules in that way, which is cool. And there's the saying that, you know, learn the rules so you can then break the rules, and he does he does exactly that.
My favorite thing about that shot that you're talking about is that you see his sabots and socks.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, he's in his flip-flops.
It's flip-flops.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think from my Star Trek knowledge, that I think they're called sabots, because sabotage is when the workers would throw their sandals into the machines to break them.
Gotcha.
Or so Kim Cattrall told us in one of the early Star Trek movies.
And the funny thing is, when you first look at it, it takes you about like four times of looking at it, and then you're like, wait, his feet are in there. Because they kind of blend into the snow, and you don't really see him like right off the rip, you know? And then after a few minutes, you're like, oh my God, there's feet there. And then I thought it was clever too, and I have no idea if this is meant to be there or not. But so Takeru Kobayashi is the hot dog eating king on Coney Island every year when they have that competition of who can, you know, what does he eat, like 50 hot dogs in like 10 minutes or something. You know, I don't even know how many the guy eats, but he eats like, you know, just dozens of them. And then there's Mayor Kobayashi, who's banishing all the dogs to like the trash heap. So both Kobayashis devour the dogs.
That's right.
Yeah. So maybe there's a connection to Carol Kobayashi eating hot dogs and Mayor Kobayashi banishing the dogs, you know?
So Mayor Kobayashi throws them to an island, and Takeru Kobayashi puts them in the toilet.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. And then like you said, I mean, now we need the Save the Dinosaur program or whatever that was, where, you know, the dinos are on an island and these dogs are on an island.
I had to look it up because you were trying to figure out how many he ate. What was your guess again?
I said like around 50.
How many hot dogs? 110 bunless hot dogs in 10 minutes.
Man, bunless, sure. But I'll eat like two bunned hot dogs. Like, you know, I grew up in Chicago, so we get Chicago dogs. And one thing that's awesome about a Chicago dog is like Chicagoans are not afraid of putting a salad on their hot dog. But even with that, whatever. Like, I'll eat two and like I feel bloated. 110 in 10 minutes?
Yes. In 10 minutes. But, I don't know, is this more impressive? He ate 60 bunless hot dogs in 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Wait, how many?
60 in 2.5 minutes.
But I think, like, he grabs it, he dips it in water, and, like, down the neck it goes.
That's gross.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it must be that he eats them so fast that the stomach can't trigger your full yet. I don't know. Yeah, how do you not, like, puke at some point?
Well, I think from what I saw some clips of like how he does it and stuff, and I think he drinks a lot of water.
Yeah, and he dips them in water and they slide down the neck.
No, but before, like in preparation for it,
he
drinks
okay.
water to distend his stomach, to make his stomach bigger.
So there's like strategy behind eating all these hot dogs.
I will say, so we went to Prague to finish film school. And there was a restaurant in Old Town Prague in the old Jewish quarter, and it was a Belgian restaurant for mussels and things like that.
Yeah,
but they had on the wall like eat this steak and it's free. And
what is it, like a 5-pound steak or something?
It was like 2 kilos or something like that. So yeah, it was a 2-kilo steak, right? And I was like,
well, that's right. Yeah. Metric.
Baby, I can do that. I can do that. He can eat that steak. So I convinced a couple friends to go, and we said, we'll all order the steaks and then we'll get them all for free. So we get to the restaurant. I'm the first to order, so I said, I'll take the XL 2 kilo thing on the mirror. And so I order that, and they're like, oh, he's going to do the challenge or whatever. And my friends, they all wimp out. They're like, oh, we'll take the muscles. And I was like, you guys, we're going to do this with me. And my steak comes out, and it's got a sparkler stuck in the bone marrow. And it's like going off, and everybody in the whole restaurant's like looking at me. And I spend the rest of the night just downing this steak.
So did you do it?
Oh, yeah. I polished that off. I actually ordered a beer with it, and I was like, that's stupid. I'm going to finish this beer and switch to water because there's no way I'm going to finish this.
Yeah, you're going to be bloated with carbonation. Yeah, that's why, like I said, I could not make a hot dog eating contest. Like, after two hot dogs, I'm done. Like, I might be able to pound down three of them, but no way could I go for four.
Or 60.
Or 60. All right, we're so far off the dog island. We got to get back.
Okay. The Isle of Dogs.
We're so far off the aisle. We got to get back to the aisle.
Amazing movie. Super excited about it. Did you catch, there's a scene where there's that big circle of lights over the guy, and there's like a command center?
Yeah.
It's about a minute and a half into it.
Uh-huh.
And I was immediately thought of the war room in Dr. Strangelove. Have you seen that recently? Probably like 30 years or something.
I'm going to say I saw it. Oh, if I had to guess, probably about 10 years ago. That's the last time I saw it. Yeah. I know exactly. I've seen the movie a number of times, so I'm familiar with how it is. And yeah, I would agree with that. That's pretty cool.
So there's so many of these set pieces and beautiful shots, and like, it's just eye candy as far as the eye could see. So.
Who do you suspect the blonde woman with the big fro is?
Oh, like within the movie, like the character?
Yeah, the one who has like the crush on him or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you think she plays in?
I think she's just like helping him, you know, like you always need helpers and foils. And so I think she probably helps from the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it definitely feels like there's a voyeuristic movement that feels very Asian, feels very Japanese, where they start broadcasting this stuff to the mainland, and the people get energized by seeing this boy, you know, accomplishing feats beyond his capabilities with the dog. So I think that when they show that in a film, I think it allows the audience to kind of take part in being in that part of the audience. So it's like showing the audience themselves being excited about what the boy is doing.
Right.
So I like that angle.
The one thing that I didn't really care for too much, I mean, I kind of get the beginning as far as, you know, all the brought, you know, like the movies that Wes Anderson did, and it has the Japanese writing on the left and the right, and then they kind of splash the screen with all of the legacy stuff. Yeah. It was almost just too busy, and I was trying, you know, the first go around, you're trying to read all this stuff and see what it is, and it kind of just gets by you pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have seen it done differently.
It's overwhelming, and it doesn't give you time to process it.
Yeah, exactly. I would just rather have seen it done differently. But really, that's my only complaint about it. I mean, it looks pretty cool. And I mean, who do you think this movie's for? Like, who's the audience they're after?
I think just like the converse of Christopher Robin, this is for the Gen Xers. This is for, you know.
So you think it's inversely proportionate to Christopher Robin?
Yes. If it came out the same weekend, well, I think that maybe my kids are a little jaded to this. I think I liked Fantastic Fox too much.
Uh-huh.
And probably showed it to them too much, too early. So they are not into this style. And I think there are some themes that Wes Anderson probably takes on. There were definitely some parts of Fantastic Mr. Fox that were above my kids at the time, and I thought it could just, you know, go over their head. It looks too real for my kids. You know, we talked about this a little last time too, where they really get invested in the peril that Wes Anderson puts his characters through is a little more heightened and a little too real for everybody involved. So, you know, the tragedy and the tension you feel, which I thrive off of as far as an audience member, I think it's maybe too much for my 8 and 12 year old. I mean, just from the trailer alone is ramped up so fast that they're already overloaded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with the imagery and with everything that's going on, you know, it's explaining a lot. It's the exposition is throughout. The Easter eggs are all over the place. And you're reading into things that are there. You're reading into things that aren't. The color palette is amazing. You know, it's huge. It's wide. It's everywhere. So I can tell. I can see why somebody would say, well, it's not for me, Daddy. You go ahead and watch it.
Well, and I think it's a nice break from the overly clean, photo perfect or photo real Pixar type movies.
Yeah.
You know, we were watching Cars 3 last weekend. And mm-hmm. I mean, they're showing the cars racing, and even though it's all animated and it's Pixar and it's all the, you know, what it is, I mean, there's some scenes in there where it's too real almost.
Yeah.
And the angles that they're showing with the car on the track, and they're kind of like, it's almost like there's a GoPro right facing at the front wheel. And it's just that high def and everything and super clean. This is a little more gritty.
Yeah. So on the Cars thing, I love the trailer when that first came out for Cars 3, when you could see like that rubber and the asphalt.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Like being kicked up. Yeah. When the rubber and the asphalt's kicked up and that low angle of the cars, I thought that was amazing, like the way that they rolled that out.
Totally. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. And then, you know, my final comment. Well, no, I have two final comments. One, I love the Japanese drums.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Of how they build through up to the climax. And then there's that little like mini nuclear explosion. But no, just those drums, the way they build to the climax, it really just brings you into the moment. And once then that little explosion goes off, it's almost like the tension's released and you take a sigh of breath.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. We were at Disneyland a couple of weeks ago, and they had the Goo Goo drums, and it is, you know, those drums, and it is an amazing thing to just watch them go to town with all the different styles of drums throughout. So
yeah, and then my last comment is I hope they don't have subtitles for the Japanese speakers.
Oh, really?
And the reason I say that is, well, okay, people who speak Japanese and English, I guess, would have an advantage because they would know what both sides mm-hmm. are saying. But I kind of like how the dogs speak English. And how I mentioned, it's kind of like that's the implied barking to the Japanese. So because we don't understand Japanese, it's like it's kind of the dogs saying, well, we can't understand them and they don't understand us. And you're kind of the audience and
you would live in the dog world.
You live in the dog world and you're just kind of lost as they are of what the people are trying to tell you. And it's the body language, the facial expressions and all that non-language that you have to read into to figure out what the Japanese characters are trying to accomplish with the dogs and everything. And you are right there with the dogs, just trying to figure out along with them, like, why on earth are we here? And now we are on this zip line. Well, it's not even a zip line. It's whatever that thing is, like
the gondola.
Yeah. The old Disneyland gondola.
The Skyway.
Yeah, exactly. And you're sided with the dogs only because you understand what the heck they're saying.
No, that'd be amazing.
Honestly, I'd like to know what the Japanese, maybe their subtitles when you get the DVD later or Blu-ray later, whatever, but you know, you can figure it out. But I mean, I think it would just be funny if for the first go around to just be sided with the dogs so you can just figure out what they're talking about.
That's funny, because sometimes when you go into a movie, they'll, you know, they say, do you want the 2D or the 3D? And now if you go into Isle of Dogs, we have two screenings of Isle of Dogs. We have the with subtitle Isle of Dogs and without subtitle Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, you'd have to see it without first just to see, like, to get the full impact of the dogs'
perspective
and their emotion. And so you're totally wrapped up in their world rather than being able to understand both sides of it. You're really only into the one side. You go in as the other.
Yeah. And then you would have to put yourself in the position of the dogs for when people are talking to dogs and the dogs don't understand, then people start doing the pantomime
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to go outside? You know, like.
Yeah. I know. I see people. I have a dog and I see people do it all the time and I just roll my eyes at it. But anyway, no, I mean, I think it looks pretty cool. I don't think my kid, even though it's animated and stuff, it's total adult animation, though. You know? Not animation, but themed.
Themed, for sure.
Anyway, I think we beat this one up enough, too. So,
awesome.
What are your final thoughts and 3-word review?
My final thoughts, thank goodness Wes Anderson is back. I feel like this is totally in his wheelhouse. And my 3-word review is Wes's best friend. Wes's best friends. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is Wes's best friend. I mean, I wonder, like, why he chose dogs. And I mean, well, I'll tell you who this movie's not for. Cat lovers.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe the cat lovers would love the idea that all the dogs are put on this island away from.
You're right. So everybody left. So the dogs get shunned. And back in Japan, or well, in the mainland or wherever.
In the archipelago, yes.
Yeah, all that's left are cats.
It's cats run wild.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing that I was thinking about this was Fox Searchlight. So it really feels like this is another awesome Fox Searchlight movie that is made by the director and very hands-off from Fox Searchlight. Obviously, The Shape of Water won Best Picture and won some Oscars for Fox Searchlight. And even 3 Billboards, another Fox Searchlight film. So they're really like a huge juggernaut of an indie level film space, film studio. And then people are dogging the idea that if Disney goes through with a purchase of all the Fox properties, including Fox Searchlight.
I see what you did there. They're dogging.
That they're going to somehow, that Disney's going to somehow ruin Fox Searchlight by getting, you know, in control of that space. But with the taking on Marvel and with taking on Lucasfilm, I don't think Marvel has really had any long-term effects from being owned by Disney. And we have yet to see whether Lucasfilm comes out completely unscathed. Lucasfilm has a little bit different of a lineage, a little tighter, smaller, tighter tribe of followers of the canon of that story. But Marvel's all over the place. So you have, you know, a lot of characters. You have a lot of leeway to do that. So I think if they do go through with all of it, I don't think Fox Searchlight's going to lose its appeal to auteurs to come in and to make the movie that they want to make.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they give him the liberty or continue to give him the liberty, then I think it's still going to attract the people that are going to make the movies they want to make. And they're maybe going to get more funding to do it.
I think so.
All right. What do you say we get out of here?
Cool, man.
So I had a fun night tonight. These were a little bit off the beaten path kind of movies and stuff that we talked about. But I mean, overall, I thought it was cool. I mean, you know, it's always fun.
Yes. Now I'm going to go watch Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, right now you are?
Right now.
Man, I'm going to go watch my eyelids. I'm going to bed. All right, man. You enjoy Thor.
Good night, Jim.
You have a good night, Ted. Thanks for listening.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.